Okay, today is February 4th. We're taping the development of the Haggadah. And today we will be doing the four sons, which is skipping from four, which we left off before, Roman numeral four. We're up to Roman numeral nine right now. The reason for this skippage is that I would like to, when we talk about especially order of Magid, but even when explaining the four or five cups, is that the Haggadah as a master pedagogical piece of literature wants us to explain everything in it on multiple levels. Hanoch l'na'ar al pi darko. You can't explain the same question on different levels. The harayah, look at the questions that the boys ask. So if you just to explain what's happening on this page, and then we'll look at the back of this page for some interesting things, is you have the Haggadah first, Haggadah description before boys. Then you have the actual psukim in the Torah where these appear. You have the Mechilta and the Rishami. Right? The Talmud Bavli does not have a description of the four sons. This is the full source material in Chazal for the.
Did they mention the four sons? Like early on during the Beit HaMikdash, they had this in their Haggadah. Like everybody has the four sons in their Haggadah.
Every Haggadah is universal.
And they've always had that in every Haggadah, like all the way back.
Yes. The Chiddush is the very first thing we did of this debate is that there's a Gemara in the Sefer Brachos that says that our liturgies, davening, Kiddush, Brachos, Havdalos, right? Our liturgies come from Ashik Knesset Gedolah, which means very ancient. And the Haggadah is one of our liturgies. So, Anshik Knesset Gedolah must have written the Haggadah. No. The proof from various Gemaras that as late as the 3rd century CE, there are still debates about what is in the Haggadah. Right? Okay. So, when does the Haggadah... Now, look, what can I say? We don't have ancient Haggadahs. What I have here is some... You have these? I have like all of them that have ever been... printed, like these remakes. You ever get them in the mail for like fundraisers for yeshivas? Right? The Ginsburg Haggadah, 1725. The Offenbach Haggadah, 1722. The Venice Haggadah, 1728.
How many Haggadahs do you have?
India Haggadah. This is a nice one. The B'nai Israel Haggadah. I'd like to see that one because this is not really exposed to a lot of the other places. Right?
How many Haggadahs do you have?
A few thousand. When you come to Shabbos, not you because you're not coming, of course. But ouch! Until you finish your exams.
Yeah.
No, you're always invited anytime. Really, seriously. All right. So this whole box is filled with these remade Haggadahs. All right. These are not the originals. Although I do have one with four.
Do you have any of? So you have an authentic? Do you have an authentic?
I have all the Maxwell House Haggadahs.
No, but like, I mean like from 1400
ones?
I know actually someone.
No,
it's not. Those are from 1400. Do you know
Joel Malawski?
Sure. So he has some.
Okay. Okay. Good. All right. No, I don't have anything that's, I tell you what's very cute is that they're you know, aggrieved communities always came out with Haggadahs. I'm talking about, you have the feminist Haggadah, you have the, and they change everything. They change Dayenu, they change, okay, so, Venezia. Okay, so we're going to find some very interesting things in these Haggadahs, that some differences that appear in some places. And for now, of course, they all have the four sons. That's a staple of every Haggadah, right? Which is why we're doing it. Right? Okay. So let's just do it. Let's go right in. Okay, the Haggadah section is really quite clear. All right. What might be helpful is this right here, and hopefully this will help you when you have your Seder this year. I hope this Seder is going to be different for you from anything you've ever had. See what I did here? I have four questions on every section of the Haggadah. All right. This. In itself is, of course, the topic of six, order of Magid. But if you turn to the four sons, you see it's paragraph 7. Keep looking for paragraph 7. Why is the reference to four sons at this point in Haggadah?
What are the Torah sources of the four sons, and what is each child being taught in those sources? Why are the four sons in the order the Torah has them, which would be Rasha, Tom, Sheino, Edin, Shol, Chacham? Why are the four sons broken down in an incongruous manner, three by intellect and one by morality? Right? So that's just the classification of the four sons.
Right? Now let's look at 7a, 7b, 7c, and 7d. Okay? So let's read. Chacham Mahu Omer. Ma Eidos Vachukim Mamishpatim Asher Tzivah Hashem Elokeinu Lischem. Va'af Ata Emor Lo Ki Hilchos HaPesach Im Atir Nachar Pesach Atichon. What questions are bothering you here? Right? The Torah has four different places where it addresses a question someone might have about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Three are actually referring to a son that will ask. One, you don't wait for him to ask, you tell him. That's obviously the Shein Erev Nishal. And the Haggadah, this masterpiece of pedagogy, tells us that the questions are framed in specific ways to pick up on four different types of children. Right? One might argue that it's not four different children, it's four stages in our own lives. Because we all start off, certainly, Shener Delishol. Then we all turn mazos, we get very curious. We start asking, what's that? Then we become rebellious. Right? Everybody, even the Chofetz Chaim, had a rebellious stage. Right? And then hopefully, after that rebellion, we start to think, you know, Mark Twain said, when I was 5, I thought my father knew everything. When I was 15, he knew nothing. When I was 25, I said, how did he learn all that in such a short time? Right? To reach a certain age, and you see, you know, all right, the rebellion, I got it out of my system. That's what we all have to do, right? So the four sons are not really four different children. It's four of us. We just hopefully have to, you know, combine the various stages to in our growth in a positive way. The obvious point is that even during the Russia stage, the child needs to be addressed, and his concerns need to be taken seriously.
What's the reason for the order? Where they are? I'm saying what?
Oh, that's an answer. Yeah. Okay. All these questions are part of my the chiddush of my Haggadah. It's not for this year; it's for next year. Is that every one of these questions is answered in four different ways?
Are you ready? I got it.
It's already written, I just know what type is typesetting it, but I think it'll be ready in time for this Pesach. But each one of these questions is meant to be answered for four different types of children. And I don't call it a rush, I call it a cynic. And I don't call it simple, I call it pure. But that's all part of this. We discussed this earlier. Okay, so what questions do we have about this? The Chacham says, "Maha Eidos v'Chukim Mishpatim Asher Tzivah Hashem Elokeinu Lischem." What makes him a Chacham? Why? What Chacham does this pasuk point to? Why is this person a Chacham? It may be because we have to compare this pasuk to the other questions. Read down the line. What are the other questions? Maha Avodah Hazos Lachem. That's the extent of this question. The Tom's question is Mazos. Right? And the Shaila Dishol, for goodness sake, says no question at all. So in the scheme of things, if I'm going to compare these psukim, right, why? What makes him a chacham? Very important aspect of chachma. No? He classifies. He's a taxonomist. He looks before him. One guy calls everything he sees at the table avodah. One guy looks at what's happening at the Korban Pesach and at the Seder, and he says, what's that? Mazos. Pretty simple, right? Yeah? But the one who looks at what he sees and he's pretty descriptive. Eidos, Chukim, Mishpatim, you know. Really? You're sitting at a Seder and you're thinking Eidos, Chukim, Mishpatim? Yeah, that's pretty clever of him. There's Eidos at this table.
What is it?
Testimony. That's what Halach Manya Diachalu Avasan of Arab in Mitzrayim. This is testifying to the kind of bread our ancestors ate. And there's chukim, not breaking any bones. Why not? I like something that's in the bones. Why can't I do that? Right? Incidentally, if you know your Sefer Achim, you're familiar with your Sefer Achim? The single longest entry in the Sefer Achim is the Etzem Moshe Shemba. Don't break the bones of Korban Pesach. It's pages and pages. Because that's the book is written by a man for his young son, 5 or 6 years old, to explain the mitzvahs to me. And he's saying Zebani, Bani, Bani, right? And on the mitzvah of Etzem Moshe Shemba is where he chooses to describe a concept in Judaism which Nechama Leibowitz made very famous by calling a certain article, very, very famous, called Actions Shape Character. Remember that? She made it very famous, and it's used all over the place. Actions Shape Character. Right? Nechama Leibowitz on Parsha, so studies on Parsha in Bo. And with the access, you can see the one very, the weak, in the English translation, it's called Actions Shape Character. So the kid sees what's going on at the table, and he sees this Eidos, this Chukim, the Mishpatim. He's a smart kid. Right? He classifies. That's very important. This is this, that is that. This, you know, goes in different... This is a triangle. This is a rectangle. This is a square. This is a circle. I mean, I don't know. The first thing you're teaching little kids, 16 months old, is this is red, this is blue. Differentiate. Avdolos. Right? The other guys are just calling it Avoda and Mazos. This kid is Chacham compared to that. Right? Okay, good. All right, so what's the answer we give this kid? V'af ato emor lo ki hilchos ha-pesach. Ein maftir nachar ha-pesach afikoman. What's the af doing there? Can you translate that for me?
Even though?
Even tell him. Ki hilchos ha-pesach, like the hilchos ha-pesach, don't eat any food after the afikoman. All right, so I told you that this is an important girsa. You'll find in a bunch of these that the correct line here is afata emorlo kol hilchos ha-pesach. Right? Tell him all of hilchos pesach ad until in maftir nachar pesach afikoman. That's the last mission of Maseches Pesach. The answer is, teach him the halachos of Pesach. Teach him Maseches Pesach. Right? He's asking a nice question. Teach him the halacha. Right? That's it. Okay. Right? But we still have our girsa. It says, af ato emorlo ki hilchos ha-pesach. Now the af, with respect to the chacham, as well as the rasha, is, tell him a lot more, but even tell him this. Right? Look at the Torah's description of this boy. It's the longest one. It says, ki yishochav incha machor le'mor, ma'a edos v'achukim meshpetim asher tzva Hashem elokeinu eschem. Ve'amarto levincha. Look what we tell him, the boy, in the Torah. Sound familiar? Jack, what did we tell him?
It says, "Ramata levincha adina yinu v'ra Yisrael."
Can you continue reading?
It's yinu Hashem Yisrael v'yad ha-zakar. This is Abba Degav
Adina. Of course!
Right.
Where do we say this in the Haggadah?
Beginning,
right? Right after Manishtana, right? So, this is the answer we give to the four questions. Right? So, it's the chacham, the answer that the Haggadah gives to everyone who asks the questions, is the chacham's answer in the Torah. We assume that someone who comes to the table and asks these four questions, they're chacham already. Usually it's given to the youngest person at the table, right? Is that what you do at your house? The youngest child in the family says it? And then they could be upstaged by another younger one who learned how to do it in school, and another one, and then maybe you remember when you did it. Right? In my house, we always the youngest one at the table does it.
And then do you have to say it to yourself?
Then we sing it together. We all sing it.
Oh.
We say it in Yiddish also. Because the learning used to be in Yiddish, so it's like, this is the learning part, you know. Someone says it in Yiddish. I remember when our kids went to school, they taught them in multiple languages. To how to say, I don't know why we dafka that in multiple languages, but anyway. So okay. So the Torah's answer is Avodim Hayinu. But what kind of it? So we know what kind of answer Ein Maftir Nachar Pesach Afikoman is. We don't eat anything after the Afikoman. But can you possibly explain the girsa we have? Afata Emorlo Kihilchos HaPesach. What's the kaf doing there? It should be Afata Emorlo, either Kol Hilchos HaPesach or Hilchos HaPesach.
Is it supposed to literally mean kale?
What is it? Why is it in there? Get rid of it. It doesn't belong. I have the Ritva back in the 13th century. I have the correct girsa. Af ato emor lo kol hilchos haPesach ad einu aftir nachar Pesach afikoman. But this is the girsa you're familiar with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, all right. So you have a lot of great diukim of this, but that hilchos haPesach is like Ein maftir nachar Pesach afikoman. What does that law mean? Don't eat anything after you finish the afikoman. Afikoman means dessert in Greek. Once you finish your dessert, don't eat anything else. So what was dessert at this grand meal where we're telling the story of Egypt? Dessert was a kezias of the Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach was not dinner. Korban Pesach no chalal hasova. Dinner was a pastrami sandwich if you wanted from the local delicatessen. Dinner was a chagiga that we talked about when, you know, Saturday night kind of thing. Where you change the orders. Dinner was whatever you wanted. Right? Korban Pesach was the last thing you ate. I want the last thing I'm eating on my mouth to be something to taste. Afa tokem morlo kilchos haPesach. The whole point of what we're doing here tonight is not intellectual. If it was intellectual, I would take out Shmos Rabbah and I would take out Mephorsha to the story of Shmos. My experience, my what I'm here tonight to do with the kids is experiential. Taste, feel, touch, smell, bitter.
How do you explain the
Kehilchos HaPesach? When you teach your child, your wise child, the laws of Pesach, now you can say that should be that with the laws of Sukkot too, but the purpose of Pesach is touch him emotionally as well. So just be careful. Chacham could be intellectualize himself out of everything. Teach him that Afata Emorlo, Kehilchos HaPesach, laws of Pesach are supposed to be like a taste at the end of the meal. I want that taste to be on his mouth. No whipped cream and sour cheesecake. Korban Pesach. Tonight we're here to experience. I want you to sit on the pillow. I want you to feel. I want you to touch all the senses as you can. Right? Okay. That's the drash. Otherwise, that I would change the gears to the original. What I think it originally was. Afato emorlo kol hilchos haPesach ad in maftir nachar Pesach, which is the last mishnah in Maseches Pesachim. Right? Mishnah already have that gears. Right? So when a girsa stubbornly stays in the Haggadahs, and it's all there, they're all printed with this. So my impression is that I have to make a drash out of it. That the kaf means to compare something. Right? Okay. Now let's look at the Rosh. Rosh Hashanah. Everyone read with me?
Yeah.
You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Maha Avodah Hazos Lachem. Lachem V'lo. He says, he should have said, Maha Avodah Hazos
Tilon.
So we don't like him because he says Lachem. So the first thing, the first alarm signal that goes off in your head is, of course,
no problem.
Okay, fine, but the Chacham also says Eschem. Right? So my first question, are you all looking at this also? My first question here on the Russia is...
No, because maybe the Chacham wants to, he's asking them, because he wants to look for truth, so he's asking, what do you do, and maybe I'll follow you.
So why can't you judge the Russia the same way?
Because the Russia is, well, that's if you look at the content, I mean, it just... It depends okay. On how you
that, yes, some of Farshim will say based on other peripheral issues, we can draw that conclusion. But my question is, we will see that the Rosh is condemned for excluding himself by saying Lochem. Why isn't the Chacham similarly condemned for saying Eschem?
Because
Yes.
Eslam is more of a personal.
Okay.
And Lachem is more of a.
We show him to make that difference between Eslam and Lachem. But when all is said and done, Eslam could have been Osama. In fact, look at the Yerushalmi's question of the Chacham. Ben Chacham, Mahu Omer. You say this a little tightly. Ma read. Yerushalmi changes the Masoretic text of his question. The Korban Ha'edah that Yerushalmi says, what a chacham! He knew to change the Masorah in order to fit the Haggadah's agenda. Right? By the way, it's a very interesting thing.
Wait, so what happened? How do you resolve that?
I'll get to it in a minute. 1 second. Just an interesting thing is that you've heard of the Septuagint? You know what that is?
Yeah.
It's the Targum Shivim.
Its
origins are a little sketchy in terms of Chazal. Chazal in the Mishnah and the Seches Sofrim and the Gemara Megillah that tests says that Talmi put 72 different rabbis in different rooms and bid each one of them to write the Torah in Greek. And miraculously, all 72 of them agreed on making certain changes on their own, without knowing what the others were thinking. They made 18 changes in the Masoretic text. I'm just telling you what's written in the book. Now, what does this mean, miraculously? It means that, probably miraculously, even if they were sitting together, all agreed on the translations, that would be miraculous itself. It's Shirin Panim talk, but when you look at the corrections that the Gemara says they made, these were fundamental differences between the way we read the Torah and the way the Greeks might read the Torah. Maybe L'shem Shemayim, I want this great document called your Torah to be available to the Greek speaker, right? So there's no hint in these sources that Talmi wanted to make the Torah more readily available for secular Jews who didn't read Hebrew. He just wanted it for his library. Talmi had a very famous ancient library, which was destroyed by the Muslims, but he had a very famous library, and it was kept in Alexandria, and he commissioned the Torah amongst probably many other things. So what were the some of the corrections they made? For instance, they changed Bereshis bar Elohim to Elohim bara Bereshis. One of the very famous Greek and Jewish debates was over ex nihilo, whether there was something called Yesh Me'ayin. So the Greeks felt that there's no such thing. You can't have something created from nothing. You can have an ancient god take some matter and reform it and make a galaxy out of it, but you can't take something from nothing, which is an important Jewish tenet. It's called Yesh Me'ayin. So when they wrote Bereshis bara Elohim, when they, if they would see Bereshis Elohim, these rabbis feared that the Greeks might think that something called Bereshis Baroi Elohim. Ramban refers to these primordial objects, the Hiuli he calls it, if you recall that Greek word he uses to describe the primordial stuff. Be it as it may, there were these changes that were made in the Septuagint. Now, if you would go into the library across the street and ask for a Septuagint, you will see hundreds of changes from the Masoretic text. That's because the Septuagint next door has been the main Bible of the Catholic Church for the last 1900 years. And in their hands, Besula means virgin. So don't be surprised. Okay, the translations, they'll translate it the way they want. Not Besula, Alma. Sorry, Alma means virgin. Mm-hmm. Where Yeshayahu says, Hineha Alma Haravi, let it bend. So they're going to write, not young maiden, they're going to write virgin. As if though the Hebrew word was Besula, because that fits their religious doctrinal agenda, right? So that the Septuagint of Megillah Daf Tes is not the Septuagint of the library across the street. Why am I telling you all this? Because in the Septuagint's version of this pasuk, it's also Maha Edos Vachukim Mishmatim Asher Tzivah Hashem Lakeinu Osanu. That is significant. Let me tell you why that's significant. Or can you tell me?
Well, it's a typo. Could it be a typo in the Megillah?
No, not a Naga. Oh, no. I think the original word is Eschem. But I think that it means that the editors of the Septuagint, and again, I have to see when is the earliest Christian Bible. Christians have Bibles dating way back, because this in the Vatican they had these great airtight rooms that could preserve books. They have books of that of antiquity. And if you can find a Septuagint that has the word, and is as ancient as you can find, that has the word Osanu as opposed to Eschem. Remember, Jews were all involved with this at the outset. These were all Jews writing these early Septuagints. What does it show if our Masoretic text is clear that it's Eschem? The Mechilta has it, Yushalmi has it, Agada has it. Well, Yushalmi has actually Osanu. But no one would consider changing Eschem to Osanu unless you were aware of the Haggadah's homiletic interpretation that Lochem is wrong. That there's a problem with Lochem. That I need to change Eschem. You follow what I'm saying? If I'm going to condemn him for saying Lochem, I should have bad words for the one who says Eschem. No matter how much you want to say the difference, Eschem is still you. I have another solution that I'll share with you in a minute, but this is my contention, is that this Septuagint, this one word, I know it's fanciful, I don't know if I have no other proofs of it, but the fact that such an ancient work as the Septuagint has Osanu as opposed to Eschem proves that they had the Haggadah in mind. They knew that there's something wrong with Eschem. Maybe just the word was Osanu. Show me. It's too much in terms of the Masoretic version of Islam. The Septuagint makes hundreds and hundreds of changes to fit. For instance, I'll give a quick example. Vayomer Kain al Hevel Ochiv. Vayibihi Yosam Basfadeh. Vayokam Kain al Hevel Ochiv. Vayahargei. What's wrong with that puzzle? What did he say? The Midrashim said, The Septuagint's version of that in Hebrew is Vayomer Kain al Hevel Ochiv. Bo'u el hasodeh. Let's go to the field. There are hundreds of such examples where the Masoretic text leaves you with a parshanut problem, and a slight change in the Septuagint solves that problem. It's a worthwhile endeavor to look for all these things. But I'm just saying that I think that's what happened with Eschem to Osana. Right, which means that wherever this change was made, it was because they were aware of the Haggadah. Could have been a Christian too, aware of that difference between someone who includes himself with the klal and someone who excludes himself with the klal. Right? But that's all well and good. What does it do for us in Haggadah? Why does the Haggadah give this chacham a pass? All right, now let's get back to what Jack started to say. Let's look at some of the differences. Right, go up and down the line. What are some of the differences? I'll get you started. He calls what he sees Eidos Chukim Mishpatim. What does the other one call it?
Avodah.
So is it, yeah?
Or is it more differences?
Yeah, we'll keep on differences, but let's just analyze each one at a time. So, do you see, while the Torah itself refers to the observances of that evening as Avodah, I quote to you, V'hayah Avodah hazos lachem l'moadah yamim yamima, right? V'shamarta es ha'avodah hazos, right? The Torah refers to what's going on at the Seder as Avodah. The Rambam has a section of the Mishnah Torah called Avodah. Right? But do you see the homiletic interpretation we're giving to this? He looks at it as, give me a good English word here.
Cumbersome.
Right? I was just thinking later. Cumbersome. Good. He looks at it as, what's all this?
But he's still on the dress of Eschem versus Lochem.
Right before he passed away, he gave a talk. It was last year at Pesach time. It was just printed up on the Gush website. He concentrates on the word Hazos. Because Ma'adah Hazos Lochem applies. Tell me if you can hear it in Hebrew. What is this work for you? This, I agree, Pesach needs to be commemorated. But I have more creative ways to do it. In other words, that Russia wants autonomy in how to commemorate this important historical event. I go along with you on the meat, but I want to do it my way. Matzah, murder, ugh, please, get away from me. Who needs this? I agree, we should remember the Holocaust, we should remember the Spanish Inquisition, but I want mine my way. I'm going to do it my own way. And I may change that in 20 years, and I'll sit at that time, I'll think it's better to do it that way. Be careful, that's Korach. That's exactly Korach's revolt. The Rav referred to it as the common sense rebellion. Of course, it makes no sense that you have to put tchelas on a garment that's all blue. And Moshe says, you know, Korach, you're right. You're right, it doesn't make sense, but that's what God told me. Okay, you're right. But not everything is common sense. If there's a chumash in the room, you're right. It looks like you shouldn't need a mezuzah on the door if there's already a chumash in the room. Right? But that's what God told me. Every room needs a mezuzah. So when Moshe said to Korach, you know, to the Gemara Menachos, the Gemara says that the color blue, a little slightly darker than this, but when the color blue is supposed to remind you about the crashing sea against the sky, against the horizon, and you see the vastness of God's majesty, and it reminds you, Evan HaSapir, and Ke'etzem HaShemayim LaTohar, it brings you right up to the Kisei HaKavod. And that's what the Tchelis is all about. So Korach says, why do the one string? I really want to wear the whole blue garment. So Moshe says, Korach, be careful, because if everyone wants their own autonomy, Mahavadah Zos, you may agree, yes, Korach, it's beautiful that you agree that we're supposed to feel the majesty. But if everyone does it on their own, it's not a good scene. So Korach says, no, I'm breaking out with you on this. You're wrong. So that's the argument according to Rav Soloveitchik, based on the Gemara Menachos. And you can picture the following. Now, this is not the Rav, this is me talking now. Is that Korach wore a whole blue garment because he loves the idea of chelis. But since everyone's doing their own thing, Korach's son decides, I'm just going to wear a blue hanky in my chelis hanky in my pocket. And the Korach's grandson is going to say, wait a second, I'm going to do better. The Gemara says it's a crashing sea against the blue sky. The blue sea against the blue sky and the horizon. I'm going to commission a big painting in my living room about a crashing sea against the sky. And every time I look at it, I'm going to be reminded of God's majesty. Now, Korach's grandson is no longer wearing a blue shirt, no longer wearing a blue hanky, and he's certainly not wearing tzitzis. And Korach's great-grandson asks his father, hey, you know what? What's this picture about? And he starts to tell him what's next to you. And then that guy, Korach's great-great-grandson, looks at the picture and he goes, you know, I remember my Zaidi Korach when I was a little boy. This man talking now is himself 80, 90 years old. I remember my Zaidi Korach when I was a little boy told me something about a crashing sea in the sky. I don't remember that. So you see what's happening here? Just took four generations. No tzitzis, no blue, no hanky, no picture, nothing. You don't have anything here. Because if you're not sticking with the basic program, stay with the matzah, the moror, the haroses, what's going on with it, and you want to add to that and make other commemorations and make other drushes, fine. But don't give me Mahavadah Zos if you want to have the full autonomy of how to remember Yitzchak. Because before you know it, in a couple of generations, you're a Korach. All right? That's what Rav Aaron said. So he concentrates on the word Zos.
But we never addressed why it still says as parents.
All right, I'm getting there. I'm on the other time. Yeah, so but what I want to do is go through some of the actual psukim inside. But yeah, you have an idea?
The Chacham says Hashem Elokeinu, which is still Elokeinu is not Elokeinu.
Okay, since the Chacham used the word Elokeinu, which includes inclusive, it blunts the comparison between Lochem and Eshem, which is what you said before. Okay. Since he did say Elokeinu, now in my work, I make so many drushes about the differences. I just ask, Lefisha Hotsia Tatzmo Min HaKlal Kofar B'Ikor. Really? He's a Kofar B'Ikor? Lefisha Hotsia Tatzmo Min HaKlal? How is he Kofar B'Ikor? Kofar B'Ikor means he's an absolute heretic.
Excuse me, in all of Chazal, only two things make you a heretic if you do. If you only do that thing. Open violation of Shabbos, Chulin Daf Hei, and flagrant Avodah Zarah, as opposed to just Avodah Zarah to save your life or something, but that you actually believe in Avodah Zarah, you want to worship Avodah Zarah, you share Avodah Zarah and teach others. Avodah Zarah and Chilul Shabbos is considered a kofar b'ikar. But there's no other mitzvah in the Torah that if you violate that mitzvah. Where do we see that if someone doesn't include himself in the Pesach proceedings that he's considered a heretic? That's a deeper question that we'll have to deal with. But here's what I did in the drash. You ever hear of a medrash? It's a daf yomi this week, Sunday or Monday. If anyone here is doing a daf, when Titus entered the Kodesh Kodashim, remember what the medrash Gemara says?
He stabbed him.
Yeah, he stabbed the parochus.
My dog tells him it was a mosquito.
And yeah, that's the end of the story. Yes, and it says blood spurted out. What did he think he did?
Killed God.
Haraget that smoke, the Gemara says.
Killed himself.
Yeah, because you can't say
it's a euphemism. Right?
You don't want to say that he killed.
Oh, man. You just say haraget that smoke. So that's the drash here. The fisha who see at that smoke in a cloud. He doesn't mention God the way the chacham does, right? This builds off of our own instincts, you know, the brother said. Is that the fisha would see at that moment a cloud? He doesn't want to include God in this because he thinks the whole thing is just a man-made representation and memorial. Right? You see it? The fisha would see at that moment a cloud. Let's make a similar drash. He does not want to include God because the chacham at least mentions Hashem Elokeinu, as opposed to the Russia that just says not something like that. Okay? Alright, so but here I would like to just to give you, I usually go through a lot more of the differences, which we will still do next class, but this is a perush that appears the first time in David Zvi Hoffman. You familiar who he is? David Zvi Hoffman. He is a great German commentary of the 19th century, who was very rare, only maybe two or three of such characters, who was enthusiastically embraced by the Torah world as well as by the scholarly world. If you were in scholarship in 1860, you weren't. The Torah world had nothing to gain from you. They were rejected. You were in the Torah world, the scholars thought you were, right? There's some people that made their way in both, Avraham Berliner, first scientific addition to Rashi, maybe Shmuel David Lutzato, who now is gaining a lot, he's really being studied. It's really an extraordinary commentary. And while the conservative movement now, and the Judentums, the science of Judaism study, like to use, to consider him to be like a conservative Jew, and his credentials of Masora and let's say the authority of tradition, I think, are impeccable. But to use scholarship, to approach the Bible the same way you might approach Shakespeare. But Shmuel David Lutzato is used by the forces that want to show that. Because no doubt he cites throughout his parish of the Torah, and I've been through with a fine tooth comb. He mentions reams and reams of ancient Greek material. He's all over the place. He quotes everybody. He knows 20 ancient Christian scholars by name, and they're on his Rolodex.
What time period was he looking at?
1870. He wrote in 1860.
Was he a rabbi?
He was the great nephew of the Ramchal. Lutzato is his last name. So he's got quite a bit of a surge. So right now he's just been translated into English, some of his works.
Where did he live?
He lived in Italy. But let me get back to David Zvi Hoffman and just finish off for today. Is that Hoffman reads this pasuk as a sirus hamikra. It says ki yisholcha bincha machor lemor. And here's the question: ma ha'edos? Right?
Asher Tzivo, Hashem Elokeinu. And then here is Eschel. David Tzvi Hoffman claims that the Eschem is not part of the boy's question to his parents. Eschem is part of Moshe's words to Bnei Israel. However you look at it, there is a grammatical inconsistency of starting in singular and ending in plural, but I got to tell you, the beginning of Dvarim, where this appears to our Perek Dalet, does this flagrantly, starting something in singular and ending in plural. It's a lot all over the Torah, but each time for a good reason. But anyway, you get it? Ki yishochah bin chomachor le'mor eschem. When your child asks you tomorrow, again, asks you tomorrow, when your child tomorrow asks of you, ma eidos v'achut meshvetim asher tzva Hashem Elokeinu. The Septuagint, if they wanted to change something, right? Put the word Eschem earlier in the Pasuk. Do that. Right? Which is what the Pasuk really needs to say in the first place. Says
I don't think that's a good explanation.
Eschem is not part of the boy's question at all.
Look, he says, Ma, how do you know this? It's Ma, I do so.
Right, as far as the Haggadah goes, yeah.
Okay, so.
Because the Haggadah doesn't start with the beginning of this Pasuk. Ki yishochah b'nechah machor lemor. The Haggadah starts there. You're right, as far as the Haggadah is concerned, you're right, Eschem is problematic, and then you have to rely on Natan's answers of all the differences between the Chacham and the
Rosh. Right, we never could answer Eschem versus Lashem. We can never answer that.
In this homiletic text, you have to rely on either Eschem is different than Lachem.
But then why did Yerushalmi say Lachem? Why did they...
Because they're bothered by it. But I would tell you, in terms of the Pshuto Shel Mikra, of the actual Pasuk, right, Eschem is not necessarily problematic.
Right, but Yerushalmi quoted that the Chacham asked Lachem, not Eschem.
Yeah, agree.
Why did they do that?
Yeah.
So why
because they do consider it problematic. Well, you're right. The Haggadah is giving this kid a free pass. Right? The question is also, why is the Rasha, why are we being so harsh with this guy? Afatah hakeya shinav emorlo bavurzeh asa Hashem libetesim in Yisrael livelo lo ilu hayasham lo haya nigal. What? What does that Gadda mean by hakeya shinav? Right? That Gadda says the Rasha is a kofar beikar, a denier of the fundamentals of religion. How? How does the Rasha's answer relate to his question? And why are we so sure that if he were in Egypt at the time of the redemption that the Rasha would not have been redeemed? This is how you deal with a cynical kid? He's at the Seder, for goodness sakes. Why is that God being so harsh with him? All right, we'll have to deal with that in Mitzvah Hashem next time. And what do I do with this?